Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, happy or sad, officially Syracuse season slash mysterious Slovakian recruit week.
Yeah, we'll go with the latter, but first talk about the former anyway, just because it's a bummer. We kind of saw this coming. This was a very big part of the discussion last week in the secret tapes that'll probably never see the light of day, where Dan and I talked for 20 minutes about lacrosse, only to have it deleted by my computer crashing. Because this is what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either of us predicted a straight up loss, but I think we both figured Syracuse would be in for a dogfight because, you know, we've watched Syracuse play for a couple minutes this year, and that's how every game aside from like a couple have gone. And Towson just kind of seemed to play the style that would give Syracuse frustration and with the ball control, and they got they got one of those hot goalie performances in the tournament, which was run into so many times recently. They did really well in the faceoffs, and SU came out sluggish. It was like the sum of all fears for this particular Syracuse lacrosse team, and it went about as if you were predicting a loss, you probably predicted the game to look exactly the way it did.
Yeah, I can't say that I loved the beginning. Unfortunately, I couldn't say I was surprised by the beginning either. It very much looked like the beginning of just about every other game, win or lose. As we all know, Syracuse has not started well all season. They pretty much, it seemed, went out of their way to give every team a head start and then tried to test themselves to see if they could come back or not. That strategy didn't work with Towson. Never in my wildest dreams did I think we were going to lose that game, however, and that's what makes this so tough, and that's, I think, what sent a lot of people reeling is, like, and not even just, like, the usual Fire Desco people, but I feel like everybody is just... I think everybody's looking for answers just because of now. It's not just this loss, it's the whole season. It's because of the length of time between, you know, us really having a complete campaign that ended in the final weekend. I think a lot of people are confused. My kind of counter to all that, just like we've talked about before, is you don't fire somebody unless you know who you're hiring to replace them. And I don't think there's anyone that can do a better job than Desco at SU right now.
Yeah, that's my thing. I think there is very fair criticism of John Desco. I think as Syracuse, you want to have more postseason success than they have had recently. And I think if you want to be critical of Desco, that is totally legit considering how the last 4 years and then much of the last 8 years has gone. I just think you have to be able to answer that question of, are you going to be able to hire a coach that's better? And just like, I don't know what, if there's an obvious direction forward if you do get rid of Desco. Maybe there is, but like, are you really going to go hire, are you going to go poach one of the top coaches from another school? Like, it's not like there's another program that's stepping up and dominating the sport. It's actually, like, there's actually become a fair amount of parity to lacrosse recently. Like, there's this whole second tier, which we talk about a lot, that's risen up and really kind of taken the reins in these national tournaments of Denver or Notre Dame. And, you know, you could even argue a couple of those schools have, like, reached the first tier in terms of how they performed recently. But also, even with games, and a lot of them look very similar, I think you always want to be very weary of reading too much into single elimination tournaments. Obviously, the ultimate goal, especially as a program like Syracuse, is to win the national championship, and that requires winning these tournaments. But when you're losing, you know, when you're going 15-3 or something, and you're losing one game in the second of the tournament, like, yeah, that leaves a bad taste, and you fell far short of the ultimate goal for the program, but I don't think you want to make rash judgments over the future of the entire program based on these one-off games. And it stinks that that's the way that it's decided, and it's the same way in college basketball and everything else, and because this is a smaller tournament and a smaller sport, when Syracuse loses in the second round, it burns a lot more than in basketball, where you're like, okay, well, back to the drawing boards. But I just think you can be critical of Desco and not come off like, you know, a deranged lunatic where so many people, every time Syracuse gets up a goal in a regular, random regular season game, spout off about how you need to fire Desto and names that Syracuse ends up winning. So it kind of devalues the whole like trumpeting for another coach when the people who seem really gung-ho on firing Desto are absurd about it during the year.
Right. I think, you know, Desto has like one of the 3 to 5 most talented teams in the country every year. He has a history of success. It's not as if that this recent string of falling short of what are, as we both know, ridiculous expectations on an annual basis. You know, it's not as if that this is the only thing he's done. He has a resume of championship winning success. You know, I think that then you have people who, there's a lot of diehards who are, you know, big fans of both the men's and women's team. And I think on the women's side, they're just kind of, they're merging their opinion of Gate and what he hasn't been able to accomplish, despite, you know, a lot of resources and a large budget and improved recruiting. I feel like they're merging the criticisms of the two. And to be honest, like, this isn't going to turn into a women's lacrosse podcast necessarily, but at the same time, like, that's a program worth maybe asking some questions about the job Gates done when you look at how BC ran through that team a couple weekends ago.
Yeah, and it's funny because Gates, the name that a lot of people were pointing to like just 3 or 4 years ago about who should replace Desto. The other thing is, like, this would be a lot different if Syracuse was like what Hopkins has done recently, where they've had middling seasons and they sneak into the tournament. Syracuse is like the top 4 seed almost every year.
Right.
This year they were the 2 seed, and I don't think this was a particularly impressive Syracuse team on a weekly basis. They won a lot of those games. I think if you had like the Pythagorean charts, Syracuse would probably look a lot more like a, you know, middle of the run ACC team this year. And they got lucky and they won. They knew how to win.
Yeah, I think Glaude said they overachieved by like 2.5 games, and like in a short season.
Yeah, which seems about right.
Yeah, like right. If so, you overachieved,
but even
by, like,
even with that.
Yeah, if you
even with the 2 or 2.5 games. I'm sorry.
That's fine. We're
just, go ahead.
We're just going in circles. You feel free to go, Dan.
Okay. That was great.
This is what happens when you don't have visual cues.
Yes, when you're 3 time zones apart. No, I was going to say 3 times. Even with the 2 or 2.5 games, you're looking at probably like the 4 or 5 seed in the tournament. So, like, if that's like I'd say that's a one of the worst years in recent history in terms of the regular season. And when that's the mark that you're hitting every year, like, yeah, it stinks that you're losing in these single elimination tournaments, but like, you're in a position to do well every year. And it's not like Desto hasn't won the tournament before. And he's won the tournament when there are more dominant teams in contention every year. This year, I mean, there's a lot more of an even playing field, and there's more landmines, I think, throughout the tournament, but you don't have as many, you don't have like the 2 or 3 powerhouses waiting for you at the end. There's, you know, a bunch of more good teams. So, when Syracuse falls off, or if this happens ever, it might not, but if Syracuse gets to the point where they're finishing, you know, middle of the conference and they're the 6th seed more often than not, then I think we have a good discussion. When they're the 1 or 2 seed and almost every year, and they're making the tournament every year with ease, and they're winning the ACC every year, or most years, I know they fall short this year in the tournament, despite finishing first in the regular season, like, then I think we have a discussion and you can point to, like, more than just one data point. On a yearly basis. But until then, I think we need to just kind of stay the course and see where we go, because there isn't this glut of coaches around the country that you're going to point to and say, they will definitely do a better job. I don't think there's any coach you can point to and say, well, he will definitely do a better job than John Desto, even if you had your choice of the entire world of lacrosse coaches. It's just not that sport right now. So I think you have to tread very, very carefully. And again, that's not to say that there isn't legitimate questions about the job he's done. I think there are, but I don't think we're anywhere near the point of where you fire him, especially considering, yeah, we lost a Towson. We lost a Towson team that played really well, and we lost a Towson as the 2 seed in the tournament, as the 9 seed after a bad year. So it's tough. I get the frustration, and I share in the frustration. I just think some people are trying to treat this like it's college basketball or something, where you can point to, you know, 15 dream job coaches and say, well, we're the best program ever. Why can't we go get X? Like, Shaka Smart's not out there. There just isn't, like, that guy waiting in the wings. So you have to be very smart about this. And I think, based on the athletic department we have now, I think that it's probably a good thing for Desto, because Wildhack has been there. I think he was a classmate of Desto's. He's been there. He knows Syracuse lacrosse. He understands the program. So I think this is actually going to be, I mean, if you're Desco, I think you probably have to feel pretty good about things. Versus, like, if Mark Coyle was still here, I'd be interested to see what would happen. But either way, I don't think we're anywhere near answering these questions right now.
No, I mean, to be honest, I don't think Coyle would have had the balls to pull the trigger just because he was never at a school beforehand that had any lacrosse tradition.
That's very true.
Yeah, like he just wouldn't have had the expertise and abilities. He would have relied on people within the department, and I think everyone within the department is pretty high on Desco. The only thing that might have happened is that he would have... I think Gross would have fired him by now and would have pushed for... and just would have inserted Gate, to be perfectly honest.
That's possible. I mean, that's the problem with that, though, is that Gross was on such a fine, like, he was walking such a tightrope that you fire Desco and you risk losing, like, the entire lacrosse infrastructure. Obviously, hiring Gate would make up for a part of it, but firing Desco is tough. Like, that's a really, that's a ridiculously difficult decision, even if he starts losing a lot, like, which he's not. He's not losing that much, right, which is the problem. He's losing at the wrong points. But I think it's a very... I would not want to make that decision.
No, like, absolutely not.
Firing Boeheim's harder because of the national thing. Firing Desco, in terms of just, like, Syracuse sports in a bubble, is not that much different.
He's
had crazy success.
I think you're completely right there. I think he's, you know, for better or for worse, the face of the program, and he's kind of ushered in, you know, the most recent era, which, again, like, looks different to fans and different is bad. I think especially with this fan base, that's not an insult. That's just a fact. And don't at me, because Syracuse fans can't claim, and again, this is us included, Syracuse fans can't claim that they are even more probably change-averse than most fans around the country. It's true. And to be honest, like, it comes from, and again, this is something that you and I discussed multiple times. I discussed with Sean on this podcast multiple times. Like, the fan base is shaped by a lot of stability, sameness, and reasonable success in several major sports. They've only had a handful of coaches in the three major sports that SU sponsors. Like, so yeah, that'll happen. That doesn't mean it's realistic. However, for the sake of us keeping that stability and keeping that sameness, like, Desco stands a better chance to get us right back to what we were used to than anyone else. And you know, you can't even say, I mean, I'm sure, I don't even bother looking at these conversations, but I'm sure that Tierney's a name that gets tossed around quite a bit when people are talking. But like you and I discussed last week on the part of the show that was canceled, and I know that Jim has mentioned it on the site and numerous others have as well, is that, like, the advantage of Denver right now is that you're the only game in town. Save the military academies, like, well, one specific one, Air Force. If you want to play, you know, lacrosse anywhere, like, west of Texas, so Denver has an advantage there, and they also get to play against a just not great Big East every year. They don't really have to be tested in the same way. They're not, you know, maybe as mentally and physically exhausted. But again, you know, there's plenty of great lacrosse out here. And Denver really gets to mine that better than anyone else. You know, he wouldn't have the same luxuries, and no coach would have the same luxuries at Syracuse, at Hopkins, at Princeton, Maryland, anywhere else, to just, you know, grab an entire region of the country's top lacrosse talent. So, you know, that's strike one if that's the route you're selling yourself on.
Yeah. I do want to reiterate, like, I think we both share in the frustrations of the people who are frustrated about Syracuse lacrosse. It's just, you need to, like, I was very annoyed watching that game most of the first half when I was at brunch and had it on my screen on ESPN, and was like, oh, it's 5-0 already. That happened. Again, you have to just take a step back and just look, just process, like, the whole situation and the whole sport and figure out, like, come up with an answer. Like, if you want to fire Desco, bring me an answer as to who you want to get and how you know or are very confident that will make it better, and I will respect that. I don't see a lot of those answers coming from the fire Desco crowd.
No, you're completely right there. And, you know, the limelight, as we see with lacrosse, and not lacrosse, we see also with basketball, is a double-edged sword. It's okay if you want that top four seed every year. Sometimes that comes with a loss, and if it comes with a loss, it might seem, you know, worse. But to be honest, I'd rather just win it all. But if you're not going to, I think you'd rather, you know, have a really great season, get a top four seed and not make the final four, than squeak in to the tournament like Hopkins, get blown out in the first round, and then you sit around all the time wondering, like, what happened to your program?
Right, exactly. And as the sport continues to expand and grow and everything else, you don't want to be, like, left behind. Like, I'm way happier being in the position that Syracuse is than Hopkins. And Hopkins is the only school that has anywhere near the tradition Syracuse does, and they don't have any other major sports to really worry about, and they haven't been able to figure it out. Syracuse has every major sport, except for baseball, if you want to count that, which is, you know, maybe a little bigger than lacrosse nationally on the college level, to worry about, and they still manage to like be competitive in the best conference in the country every single year since they've joined it, and have a million national titles and are a national championship contender pretty much every season. So I think in the macro, aside from just not having that title for, you know, what, 8 years now, 9 years? Yeah, which is gross. It was my freshman year. I kicked myself for not going. That was a game time decision. Like, it stinks. But I think we've been at least in the discussion pretty much every year since. Like, we're always right there. And eventually, odds are, I think we will break through, and I think that will be with John Desto as head coach.
Agreed. Moving on to the other big topic for this week, before we get into just random nonsense, Syracuse got another recruit for basketball of 2017, and that's a good thing, obviously. And not only that, but it's someone who's very unlikely to go one and done. The Slovakian forward, Marek Dolezaj, is officially with SU. Obviously a little bit more on the clearinghouse front perhaps to get past, but
they announced him, so I imagine he's good. I don't think they would have announced him if he wasn't good.
Fair. But yeah,
it's Syracuse, so
Syracuse,
we might be wrong.
Assuming he's there, though, yeah, I think we have a really good 4-year guy, kind of a Christophe Ogenat type, who can maybe see his abilities upswing. I mean, I saw a scout had him, would have had him as like a 4-star.
I think they have him as a 4-star, yeah.
Yeah, so he's the type of guy who really needs to add some bulk, but can still provide some meaningful depth now and some potential, you know, real talent later on for SU.
I'm more excited about him after, like, watching, and obviously it's highlights, so, you only know so much, especially coming from Slovakia. But, that being said, I watched a decent amount of his tape. I'm impressed. Like, he at first thing that jumps off, dude's really athletic. There are some, if you go to his Instagram page and be creepy like that, you can find a lot of film of him throwing down some, like, really nasty dunks for a 6'8" wing. Has legit hops. I mean, he's a creative dunker. I don't know how much that actually means for in-game, but he's very athletic, which is fun. He apparently shoots the ball pretty well. Most of what you see is him slashing to the rim, but he seems to have good body control. He actually has a pretty decent dribble.
Forward decent dribbling guy, his size. To the rim is still not really a bad thing to have.
No, I'm excited about it. Like, he handles the ball a lot in what I've seen. There's a YouTube video out there that's like under his name. If you look it up, and it has like some highlights featuring him. I think he's number 7 if you find it.
Are his clips like set to Eastern European rap?
I had it on mute because I was at work. I really hope they are. I need to go look that up.
I'm praying they are. Because if so, whoever's in the AV department at SU needs to splice some of those together ASAP for the
Yeah, no, he handles the ball a lot, especially like bringing the ball up after like a defensive rebounds. He seems like pretty fluid in terms of handling the basketball, which I feel like we haven't had in years at Syracuse. Like, Wyden was pretty catch and shoot. He didn't really slash too much. Wyden's going to be the guy that I think people compare him to. I don't know that that's totally fair. I think Leiden was had a, you know, the bigger frame, more of a shot blocker. Dolezal definitely seems like more of a natural wing. But I think it's a good add. I don't know how much of an impact he'll be this year. He's very, very skinny. He's like 175 pounds at 6'9". So he really needs to put some muscle on, and hopefully after a couple years in the program, he will. But he seems very skilled, and that's good. And for a late add that a couple other power conference teams wanted, I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I like it. I think between him, I really like what Hughes is going to bring to the table eventually. And then if we add whether it's Thorpe or somebody else, I think that the, you know, I think our classes of recruits have kind of turned on their head a little bit in terms of what that entails lately. But I do like our crop of new additions when it's all said and done. I think we've addressed some needs both on the short and long term, which could be great for a program. I feel like was always kind of looking just 1 year ahead. With all the sanctions and the impact of that on the program.
Yeah, it definitely seems like more of a... it seems like this whole class, like, I don't see anyone that's projected to leave anytime soon. If they do, hopefully it's after 2 years, like we got a Tyler Leiden or one of those guys, and there's not too much you can complain about there. But I don't know, I'm pretty happy about this class that we have coming in overall. I think... it seems like our guys are a little bit under the radar, but Sidibe looks like, you know, a pretty impressive center, which a guy who is athletic and score. I think Brissett and Washington having them coming in as teammates can only help. It's not going to, like, the process that's going to, like, jump out at you, but it's, you know, not as good as some of the ones we had in the last, like, you know, like 5 years ago when we hit that peak of recruiting, but... Overall, it seems like four guys who should be able to play at the next level, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Same here. I don't have any complaints. I just hope that I hope that this is kind of the start of, you know, Autry really doing some nice closing work on the trail, and SU kind of, again, getting out ahead a couple years, because I feel like that's something that might have gone away with the sanctions, but it seems like it might be getting back on track now with a lot of offers out for 2018 and 2019 already.
Yeah, I mean, I think we almost got bit by... It was almost like in the pros, like the salary cap coming back to get you, because we're not Kentucky and Duke, where they can replenish every year, and we just recruited really well for a stretch of 4 or 5 years where we were getting unexpected one-and-dones, and we were having guys leave a year early. And Kentucky and Duke, they... that's going to happen, like, that's in the plan. It's a surprise when Kentucky guys stay for year two at this point. So they're all set to account for that, and you have a situation like Jordan Tucker, where, you know, Duke comes in last second plan B offer, and he goes there after, like, 2 weeks of being recruited, versus, you know, we were on him for longer, and then there were a bunch of other schools that were on him for, like, a year before us. We are not that school, and again, we've talked about this before. Those are the only two programs that recruit that way. Like, Arizona's kind of in that range, but they're more pick and choose. Like, they don't go head to head as much with those other two.
Final fours anyway, so who cares?
And then, right. So I think, like, all of that, really, especially with Leiden and Richardson and McCullough and all the other guys who left a good year before, Ennis is the most obvious one for that. That all came back, and I think that really hurt us down the stretch. And that's not to say that it wasn't worth getting those guys. I think it always is. You always take the talent. But hopefully now that means that we are going to, like, reset a little bit and build up some four-year classes, and then we can start trying to put in those 1 and 2 year guys again. And, like, I actually, the really good point you made was Autry was I think he was the head guy in Dolezage. I think he's going to have to really pick up the slack that Hopkins leaves behind, which is you know, one of the best recruiters in the country, and the fact that he's able to identify a kid like this who came in late. I don't think he was really on the radar till like February, for just in terms of being a D1 recruit.
Right.
I think that's when he started to announce that he wanted to play college basketball in the U.S. Just getting in there quickly like that and turning it around, and it sounds like he's going to be in, considering Syracuse announced him, announces out NOI. That's just really good work. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come from the recruiting angle.
Agreed. Dan, why don't we shift a little to halftime, and then we can jump back into some Syracuse talk.
Sounds good.
What have you been drinking?
Nothing too crazy. Just a lot of like my standard things. I still have a 6-pack of Brooklyn Sriracha Ace in my fridge, which I haven't cracked into yet, and I didn't realize they put that in the 6-pack. I thought it was only Bombers, but excited to get to that. I had some more from the brewery that my friend works at, Wolf Hollow. Finished off a growler of that the other day. I think it was their whatever one I drank last time. I can't remember the name of it. The only super new thing I had this week, one of the bars that we go to a lot locally had a like New Orleans themed like celebration over the weekend. So they had an Abita takeover, and so you know had the normal Abita stuff. I had their Creole Pre-Male, which I'm not a huge fan of pre-males generally. This was really good. It was super smooth, super drinkable. I had like 3 of them, which it was just like one of the only ones I hadn't had, so I tried it, and I was very, I liked it a lot more than I thought I would. I also think that the fact that the most notable pre-male in my life before that was Jenny probably doesn't help the pulp cause. This was a lot better than Jenny. Jenny Cremale. I'm sorry if you are Jenny Cremale acolytes, which I know so many upstate are. But that beer's trash. This was not. This was quite good. So shout out to Abita.
Yeah, I don't really know a ton of great cremales out in the Northeast. I know that there's some out here, but nonetheless, like a lot of folks go toward the blonde route if they're gonna go for something lighter and easy drinker. I know I've talked about this beer for weeks. I've been on, you know, not even weeks, months. I've been on a kick like all year. Allagash put out their, what's it called? Hoppy Table Beer, their Pater's beer. It's a kind of take on a Belgian style that you know, folks would use to brew just to have beer when they had company. But it's under 5%. Again, I know Allagash gets out there plenty, so if you see it, get it. Because especially with the summer coming, it's nice to have something a little more quote unquote crushable in the heat and humidity of New York.
I like that. I think a couple of weeks ago we were talking about that article where it was like blondes are the new sours or the new like trendy type of beer, and I think we kind of like laughed about that. And then the last 2 weeks, I think
here we are.
The most interesting beers I've had the last 2 weeks were like the Carolina Blonde from Charlotte, and then now this Cremale. Both styles I rarely drink. And I've really enjoyed them, so I guess the joke's on us for liking beers that usually aren't that interesting. So I guess it's not much of a joke.
Yeah, that's why we you write about football and not beer. But I'm trying to think what else I drank. Oh, had a 5150 IPA from Iron Fire, which is localish. That was okay. Had some Fruitlands Apricot from Modern Times. That was pretty solid. Had a buddy of mine from Texas sent is a raspberry Berliner Weiss from St. Arnold called Raspberry AF, and thought it was clever. It was on the nose for the times, and it was also a really good beer. I wish we had some of that out here. It was really refreshing and delicious. And also stopped at, I usually end up stopping at Big Bear Lake Brewing when I'm up in the mountains, but wanted to try out Big Bear Mountain Brewing. And Big Bear Mountain Brewing was much better. Atmosphere was cool. It was just an old house that they had redone into a brewery. Nothing like crazy good, but their wit beer, Endless Summer, I'd definitely drink again. I would definitely check out their Mountain Pub Ale, again, their pale ale. And then their Little Beaver IPA was best IPA I've had from the mountain breweries up there. And then had some like repeat ones as well. Had some Amarillo Gorilla from Smog City, some Citraholic from Beechwood, and then again, had some Hoppy Table beer, because I usually try to have a 4-pack of that around whenever possible.
Good stuff.
Indeed. Some other SU things lately. We have Athlon released their All-ACC teams today, for listeners yesterday. Syracuse had 5 players on the list, which is kind of like a high watermark, I think, for us on the Athlon list. We're not used to getting so much love from them, which is what it is, I guess. We were not last. We finished, I think, tied for 12th with Georgia Tech. We had 5 players. And Sterling Hoffrichter was a first team punter, which I feel like validates my constant defense of him.
Also, I think Riley Dixon always ended up being like overlooked in these things for like the Wake Forest punter, which was also pretty good, but
not nearly as good.
So I'd say this is justice for Riley.
This is justice for Riley, which sounds like the name of the Hallmark movie about Riley's life.
This is like Ernie Davis winning the Heisman for Jim Brown stuff.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Dan, do you think there's anyone else?
It's just like
exactly like that. Dan, do you think there's anyone else that should have been on this team besides the five names who were there, which for listeners, it was Sterling Hoffrichter, Eric Dungy, Steve Ishmael, Irvin Phillips, and Zaire Franklin were the names that made the team?
Not really. I think those are the ones, honestly. Anyone else, I think you're kind of projecting forward versus like what they've actually accomplished. So I was actually pretty happy with everyone that made it, and I thought you pretty much got everyone in there that earned it. I was actually almost surprised to see Dungy, just because he's done really well when he's played, but because he's missed so many games, I was a little surprised to see him on there. Obviously, happily surprised. No, I mean, you have Francois, you have a couple others.
Juan Jackson, yeah, were the two names ahead of him. But other than that, I mean, I did that article last week about quarterback matchups, and, like, the names are just not really, they're not flush with experience.
That's true, now that I think about it. Like, there are so many guys that left, like the Virginia Tech guy, who had a nice year and then passed really unexpectedly. Yeah, and I don't think he got drafted, right?
No, he did not. Wait.
So, yeah.
No, he didn't.
Did he?
Right. No, he didn't. You're right.
Yeah.
Brad Kaya barely
I didn't
got
think so. So, yeah, you're... Yeah, so I guess you're right. So the two, like, headliners are pretty big names, and then after that, there's a pretty steep fall off. But I was very happy to see those five guys make it, and I think they're all pretty well deserving. They played really well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like I said in the article, I kind of mentioned Bennett just because I felt like he's someone who's definitely put up the numbers, maybe not the same ones as Franklin, but I agree with you. I don't really have any gripes. If you wanted to keep it at that five, I think if we see another addition or two, then great.
Franklin's also helped by the fact that he's been a captain since like 1830, and he's been at media days for like 8 years in a row, and all the reporters know him. They know other Syracuse guys, so I think he's just aided by like the, you know, all that works in your favor in terms of these like reporter voting things.
Agreed. One other thing, and this might take some digging. I spent several hours of my evening on Tuesday coming up with 100 facts about Syracuse football. And you know what? I would have been able to do 100 facts without much time exerted if it was just 100 facts, but I made sure that they lined up to the numbers, which made it a little more challenging than when I did it last time. Dan, were there any numbers that kind of jumped out to you right off the bat? That you just like didn't see coming.
Yeah, I took some notes here. The most preparation I've done for this in a long time. let's see. Four. The Syracuse hasn't had a rusher in 4 years, which I knew, I guess, if I had thought about it. It's just crazy because my freshman year was the Curtis Brinkley year, which was the first 1,000-yard rusher in that string we had. Had through the Marone years, as that was the end of G-Rob, but through Marone. It's crazy that after it seemed like we were destined to have a 1,000-yard rusher no matter what, it's been so long since we've had one. And that's, you know, hopefully will change soon because we know that the commitment to the run is likely to be a thing that's coming back hard in the next couple years, even after last year we, you know, just couldn't run the ball at all. That's just very stark because it seemed like we were so... It was just 1,000 yards is like a benchmark that someone was going to get every year.
Well, and we were
the beginning of my Syracuse fandom.
And we were a running team under Schaefer.
Yeah, we just weren't good. But
we're miserable.
We were a running team in that we were bad at running, but we were also bad at throwing. let's see. The 10 total Syracuse alum in the NFL, I don't know if it seems high or low to me. Kind of around the same thing, like we had that stretch in the middle of like end of Marone, early Schaefer, where it seemed like we were getting pretty good results in the NFL draft. We had a couple first rounders in a row with Pugh and Chandler. So I'm not sure if that
Hogan stuff got drafted too.
Like, yeah, we had like a lot of guys getting drafted like the fifth and sixth round, which seems to have fallen off. So hopefully we buoy that number, since Syracuse always pops up on those lists of like the schools that have put in, like, I think we have what, the fifth most NFL Hall of Famers or something. I think we're like tied or right behind Alabama.
Yeah.
In terms of that, we're going to probably have a couple more. I think Freeney should be in. I think Tom Coughlin will definitely get in. Marvin Harrison just got in, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, you always forget like what people think about the whole gunplay thing.
They don't think that much about it because it's a very underreported story.
it's the weirdest. Somebody's going to do a 30 for 30 about it. It's the weirdest story, probably, like, inhabiting the orbit of football that, like, nobody talks about.
It's bizarre. But yeah, I mean, I think Freeney's probably the most controversial. I mean, McNabb's the most controversial one. I don't think he should be in. I'm not going to complain about it.
I wrote a blog post.
I think he's close.
Like, 08, like back when ESPN had like those microblog like setups. Like, I wrote about it, and like the numbers back him up, but like barely.
The numbers are decent, especially considering the era.
The numbers are good enough for sure.
Yeah, it just, he doesn't scream Hall of Famer to me, and I don't like if that's like a thing. Like, I'm totally willing to bend to the numbers, but I don't think the numbers are, like, there are guys who like don't seem like Hall of Famers, and you look at the numbers, you're like, oh yeah, these numbers slide right in. For McNabb, I feel like the numbers are like borderline, and then like just remembering his career, he didn't seem like the Hall of Famer, but I would celebrate if he got in, just for Syracuse's sake. I think Freeney should definitely be in. Coughlin, I think, will get in for sure. Do we count Al Davis? Is he already in? I think he's probably already in.
But I don't think he
does
he count?
I don't know if we count him. Either way, like, Syracuse has done a keep on rising, so in that list. And that's a thing that we should promote as much as possible, because I don't think many people would know that. The stats you have about the points per game, we were at 25.7 last year. We allowed 38.6. Hopefully those numbers are both
inverted
coming together this year. Yes, that'd be nice. I think pairing the offensive numbers with the 78, your stat number 78, which was a Syracuse converted 78.38% of red zone attempts, which is 1/3 in the country. I think both those things are kind of hand in hand. Just moved the ball really well. They did not move the ball into the end zone very well. But I wouldn't be shocked if you saw a pretty stark jump just in terms of scoring, because, you know, Syracuse put up good yardage, not like the yardage that we'll probably see in a couple years, but they moved the ball pretty well against most teams.
Oh yeah, I looked, they were actually
so
the best team
efficiency
in the,
goes up.
They were best team in the country in third and three or less situations, like something I didn't even know. They converted 80%.
That's impressive.
80% of the time they converted. Like, it was like, I hadn't even like looked at those numbers. I was just like messing around on CFB stats last night, just to see like where I could find, you know, numbers to fill out this godforsaken list, and one of them was that, yeah, like that. I just had no idea, and like I hadn't even heard anyone talk about it, just like just how lethal SU was in those third and very short situations.
And you know, I had no idea about that until just now. That's super. That makes me very encouraged, because that means that we know what we want to do in those situations, and it's not like in coaches of years past where you're like, it never seemed like we had a plan for any situation. Like, clearly I'd be interested to go if I had this time at all, going to see like if Babers ran the same couple plays, because it makes it seem like Babers knows exactly what he wants to do in third and short, and he's obviously very successful at converting that. So hopefully he can bring that to the red zone, where it's kind of a similar thing. Obviously scoring is a little harder than converting third and three, but like you have a go-to set of plays that you know work in this specific area. Hopefully that becomes a thing that we improve on, because I mean if you just start converting red zone attempts by an extra 10%, and a lot of that's field goals too, which were an adventure last year, as we've talked about a number of times, your scoring just jumps, because obviously there's a huge breakdown between like 25.7 points. I'm sure if you're up to like 30 points a game, you jump a pretty good chunk of the way through those standings.
Well, I think you have a good point there.
Let's
too
see, number
about, like, did they run the same play? Because I feel like that's probably the case. based on the stat that David Hale pulled last week, that Irv was one of the more efficient, third and fourth down conversion players. I mean, and Irv pretty much caught the exact same pass 90 times last year. So I'd say that's fair.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, and between that and Dungy's runs that usually converted pretty well on third and fourth down, I do feel like you probably saw the same two plays on those third and short situations, which, Babers is someone who, if you can't stop it, he's gonna pound you into the ground, and I feel like that was probably what happened.
And you know what, considering, and they probably do a really good job of disguising it, because it's not like we were, the ACC is a pretty damn good group of coaches, so I'd say that's pretty, I'd say that's a good sign, because if they can get the ball into their effective players' hands in that position over and over, and teams, I'm sure we didn't have the same system as Clemson that we did against, whomever else last year, but if the opponents that we were facing couldn't stop it or couldn't recognize it or adjust for it easily, that's a really good sign, I think. That's a sign of good coaching and coaching that's effective, considering what we know about Babers, which is, like you said, he's not afraid to go the same thing over and over and over and make a team prove that they can stop it. Last year, clearly, in that situation, it was not a thing that was being stopped. So hopefully that translates to the red zone issue, which I feel pretty decent about. The one that shocked me probably more than anything else, and it's totally irrelevant to this year's team, how the heck did Jim Collins record 42 tackles in 1979?
No idea.
In a game in Penn State. That's incredible.
I randomly found that number. I know I posted it in Slack. This is a knock on SU, and I hope they hear this, that they fix it. The SU football record books have only been sporadically updated since about 2008. Meanwhile, Wikipedia has a pretty solid running list updated through the end of 2016 for a lot of both career and individual numbers. This was one of them, and again, one that I had no idea about. So good on Wikipedia for having that for us. I'd love to hear the story behind this now, and I kind of want to go find Jim Collins and interview him, because this seems like a story.
This is why we have to all be disappointed about Bud Poledwin retiring. Because he definitely knows this.
Oh, he absolutely knows this story.
This would have been a great, the one or two pieces a year that Bud was really good about. This would have been a great one. Hopefully someone at the Post Standard can, knock on someone's door or something. We can find out more about this. That's an insane number of tackles. And I'm sure Penn State ran the ball a million times, but still. Number 75, obviously, the first meeting between Syracuse and Tulane in 1975 was pretty much just for us, and I appreciated that. And then I think the last one I pulled here was 93, which was Syracuse turns 93% of defensive production. We've talked about this before. That's a Bill C stat. Shout out to Bill C. I don't know, that doesn't always portend good things, considering how bad the defense was last year, but also considering how young the defense was and how there are a couple guys who, made solid impressions last season. I'm cautiously optimistic about that.
You know what? We're still super young this year, which is weird because I feel like we've been saying this for four straight years now.
It's just we've had a lot of people leave the program.
Also true.
But yes, it does not change the fact that we are still super young. We're just last year we were all freshmen and sophomores. This year we're just all sophomores.
We're just Benjamin Buttoning the whole thing.
Yes, we're bringing in. Can we do that with JUCOs? Can we bring in JUCOs that somehow transform into true freshmen?
That's what.
That retain their JUCO abilities.
Well, because we have, what's it called? Barry is a play 3 in 4 years guy, and then is Pierce,
which is nice. You don't usually get that.
Yeah, you don't.
I think Pierce is a 3 for 3.
Which is still. I mean, the fact that we're getting 3 years out of a bunch of these guys.
It negates a lot of the issues with relying on JUCOs. It's
high campus.
Usually that's you only get 1 or 2 years out of them, and who knows if they'll be even ready the first year. If you're getting 3 years out of a guy, that's not that much different than, a guy who jumps to the NFL or whatever, or a redshirt and leaves early or grad transfers. So, it's a pretty close to the normal amount, which is nice. And also, it's guys like Pierce who are expected to have big impact and are some of the bigger recruits that we brought in.
Yeah, and to be honest, the one good, probably best thing about the recent JUCOs has been they're not guys who come in and start and take up like a boatload of minutes. They've been guys who have been really great depth adds. So when they leave, all you do is you can just plug in another depth add. And that can either be through the JUCO ranks or through traditional recruiting at the high school level. Like, I mean, the last JUCO, and this is not even looking at the list, the last JUCO I can think of who, like, played significant minutes and started was probably Siriki.
Yeah, but I don't think he even started, like, right away. Like, it took him a little bit.
He didn't start until senior year, I think. But, like, I mean, I just mean, like, in terms of, like, a JUCO guy that you really had to, like, scramble to replace.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had that many of those. And we, I mean, I think that we've been, you know, we haven't had, like, these monstrous JUCOs who come in and light the world on fire, but we've also, it seems like most of the guys that we brought in have been decent contributors, which, you know, sometimes you have JUCOs come in and they're not prepared and they fall on their face, which it seems like we've gotten at least something out of everyone that's come in the last couple of years through, even through, like, Schaefer and Marone, which is nice.
Yeah, Lasker started, Ted Taylor started sporadically and was a great depth addition. Like, I've been fine with most of our recent JUCOs.
Yep. I think there's a little bit of a trap of, like, sometimes the expectations are, like, super high on them, and I think Pierce will probably have that because he was a four-star guy and number one recruit in the country, class, not the country. And, you know, obviously he was an SEC recruit before this, but he also, I mean, he was, like, one of the only offensive guys that really looked like a big-time player in the spring game, so hopefully that translates.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we view spring games the same way. I'm gonna ignore the negative, and I'm going to embrace the positive. And in this case, that means getting very excited about what Pierce can do. And to be honest, another guy who I know we, like, touched on him after the spring game, another guy that I'm definitely excited about and would probably be Jesse Connors, who was the Holy Cross transfer. He's a walk-on, but if any of the current preferred walk-ons, which, spoiler alert, is all of them, end up being a scholarship guy down the road, Connors might be it.
It definitely seems that way. It's almost like he can't play this year, right? It's a weird thing.
Because I thought, is it that you can transfer from FBS to FCS and play, but you can't transfer up and play?
No, I think you can. Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure you can't play this year. I don't know the reasoning behind it. We should probably look that up. But I'm pretty sure I remember seeing, like, a thing that he, like, basically would have been on the depth chart, but this rule prevents it.
Yeah, I think, you know, this was kind of an unsung part of the offseason. I feel like we, like, immediately reloaded and upgraded our tight end position, you know, trading out guys who might have been productive in a different system or used correctly, like Kendall Moore, like Cam McPherson, a bunch of others. Those names escape me at the moment. And we upgraded them for Pierce, who's a you know, fringe blue-chip recruit, depending on the season or what measures you want to use. Hackett, who's going to be a guy who you're going to be able to plug in interesting ways, I think, down the road. I think he's someone who you see a lot more of probably his third year on campus, was probably redshirt sophomore year. As Pierce gets to the end of his time, I think that you end up seeing Connors get plugged in creative ways. He seems more of like a true H-back type. And then you have, you know, we've talked about this, you know, ad nauseum, how Anoisi and Custis get used could both be really interesting. I think, yeah, we're seeing a different tight end position, but one that could really really surprise and excite this offense as Baber shows himself kind of, you know, affable to changing parts of his system to fit what's going on right now with tight ends in college football.
And also, it literally can't be used less.
Yeah, you can't use tight ends less than they have been the last 2 years, but especially last year, when you might as well have not even had the position.
Yeah, that.
Yeah. Anyway, I know we got a few minutes left if we want. Dan, is there anything that's been going on in? Might as well give a shout out to the mothership a little bit. For those who didn't see our article the other day or the links that we posted on Twitter, SB Nation is kind of stumping for Bill Connolly as the fictional commissioner of college football, and he did make a really compelling case to own the job, Dan. Was there anything in particular that really stood out to you as the reason why he deserves the title?
I actually haven't even had a chance to read that yet. I have it pocketed somewhere, and we'll hopefully get to it tonight. I will say I've had a couple beers with Bill after his book came out, and I wholeheartedly believe that he probably has some really good ideas in there. I saw there was something that I saw being talked about. What was it? I'll think of it real quick.
I don't have them in front of me right now, but I think his player bill of rights was a big one that I'd endorse, and that also ties into paying the players. If you can get those two things done, then you can also address one of his other kind of platforms, which was bringing back NCAA football from EA Sports. I think that that's a key. I know on this week's Shutdown Fullcast, they were addressing, Spencer said this and nobody really responded, and I don't know why. Why don't you just have mascot mode now? Like, what's preventing us from having mascot mode?
A lot of it doesn't make any sense. Why they needed that game back. I haven't bought a system in I think two generations. I would go buy it tomorrow if NCAA was out. And I would play it. Would be the only video game I played probably, and I'd be very happy to do it.
But why don't they have mascot mode? I just don't understand. Like, I would play mascot mode every day of my life.
You know what's great is you know that EA would just make mascot mode, but they'd assign like the heights and weights and the skill attributions from the actual players. So you'd have Eric Dungy Otto, Steve Ishmael Otto.
Why does Otto have a number two on his back? Wow, he seems like a real dual threat. That's weird. When did Otto get so skilled? And why is that Otto? Why is that Otto really good at moving linemen?
That Otto keeps on converting third down. Amazing.
Yeah, that Otto is a very skilled slot receiver. What did he catch, 90 balls last year? Cool.
That'd be so much fun.
That would happen. But yeah, if they don't bring back the regular game, bring it back as mascot mode. I'll recruit Otto's all over the place.
They need to make you like able to recruit just various Otto's from around the country.
Please, yes. Please, yes.
I think we would have to only recruit like Florida and California. California, right? Like, how many other orange-bearing states are there?
Probably none. yeah, I don't know where else you'd grow them. But that's fine.
It's like Florida. I guess Florida would have more room, because, like, there are gators elsewhere. But I guess they'd be very state-focused. Which school would have the hardest time recruiting for its mascot? UAB?
UAB, because they're not real. they would just recruit California because we make dragons in Hollywood. Who would have a really terrible time? If you were Stanford, would you actually have to like do anything, or could you just go grab the trees?
I mean, they're like redwoods up there, right? Like, how far are those?
Not very far. Redwood
and
City is like.
I'm guessing they would all have good grades.
Yeah, they're incredibly smart.
You know what? A sneaky tough one, Tulsa. Like, how many Golden Hurricanes are out there?
Probably none.
Yeah, Tulsa just have to like end their program, and they wouldn't even have Bear Bryant's son have to like push them out like UAB.
Oh, Akron would have a tough time. How many?
That's just so many flights.
It's so many flights, or you'd have to like try to sneak into zoos. Those bastards at Akron stole all of our kangaroos.
Terry Bowden hopping fences to steal kangaroos from zoos around the country.
That would be the best television show. Baylor would just have a hard time on paper.
I mean, that's already the case.
Nittany Lions aren't real, technically.
Also, actually, Baylor's team of literal bears would be so much less objectionable than everything else that's done on a Baylor recently.
Very much agreed.
They just climb trees and eat honey. They haven't harmed anyone.
Hey, you guys are fine, whatever. You don't have to put jerseys on them. I'll watch. Although, I probably mentioned this. I paid a visit to Baylor last year just because I was driving from, Fort Worth down to Austin. And I stopped into the new stadium, McLean Stadium or whatever the hell it is. And in their like club level for like high level donors, who everybody in there was like eating free meals, you know, on the university / their dime, and they were all like above 65 or 70 years old, and all these like oil people. But
I can't believe it.
I know, it's shocking. And you know who greets you when you get into the club? Because I asked them if I could just like go out to the club level just to like look at a view of the stadium, because the stadium was like closed. So I was able to do that, but who greets you is a very large bear in a like 1996-ish like Baylor jersey. Like he's just this like large. I'll send you the photo after. But yeah, it's very strange. I might just use it as the header photo after this. Actually, no, I shouldn't, because I don't want to start. I don't want to start creating.
Oh, don't do that.
Between Baylor and Syracuse.
The one we're forgetting, Western Kentucky. I don't know where they make those blobs. I don't know where you find them.
Excuse me, Hilltopper. What might you be?
But unless you take the name in another direction and you just raid gas stations for Pats of Big Red, maybe that's what he is. Maybe he's just a blob together. Like he's like four pieces of chewed Big Red, just like smushed together.
He could be. Oh, we just got a football commit.
Oh, what? Breaking news.
Breaking news on the podcast.
Let me turn my computer back on. Instant analysis. Hold on.
Jordan from I have no idea where. I literally had never heard about this kid. That doesn't mean he's not, like, good. He actually might be great.
How do you spell his name?
J-A-W-H-A-R. Jordan.
J-A-W-H-A-R. I misspelled his name, and it still came up on Huddle. On Google first, Jawar Jordan. It looks like he's a track star, unless there's a different one.
That's cool. I mean, it's not really atypical for us.
He's a running back from Arizona. Do I have the right guy?
Maybe I was trying to make sure this computer didn't crash, so I had everything but Skype and our recording software off. So I've been using my phone to look everything up.
I like that we're like, oh, this is live. This will be so cool. But then, like, everyone will know all. Yeah. All of this by the time it hits tomorrow. We saw running back from Arizona.
Like after this podcast ends.
He has an Arizona offer. He has an Iowa State offer. Kansas, Fresno State, Hawaii, Idaho, UMass, Mizzou, Oklahoma State. Really, you know, solid offer list. Rutgers.
He's what? I would assume
he's like a mid three. It's like 83 on 24/7. Number 74 running back from the country. Number 10 recruiting at a decent state. Nice get. 5'10", 160, so smaller, like, stat back type, looks like. We were the last offer, so we didn't, like, you know, we just went and got him.
And that's
pretty good.
That's two running backs now for 2018?
Believe so, yeah. We have him, and we have our last commit was also a running back, right? Akeem Dixon from Vero Beach. And then, just we assume Trillian Williams will play DB. Yeah, so that's the 8th commit for Syracuse. They have the, according to 24/7, now the number 36th class in the country.
Ooh, that's definitely a highlight for us. We are, what can I say? We're killing it.
You know what's impressive? This kid is what, like a half a dozen, maybe like 7 or 8, including like Oklahoma State and a couple other big ones, Power 5 offers, and you're splicing. I mean, who even knows what the difference is? But like, he's 24/7, our number 6th ranked commit out of 8. So like, our average commit is a pretty high level for compared to like where we've been, where we used to be pretty excited if they had like one or two other Power 5 offers. Now it seems like everyone has at least a few.
Which, yeah, awesome. Let's celebrate that. I am.
Oh god, this Baylor and the Baylor Bear jersey is just amazing.
This is stupid.
Like, looks confused.
He looks confused, A, because he's in clothes, and B, because I'm pretty sure that what they did here was they got a jersey that, like, they either, like, stitched it on him instead of getting, like, an extra, extra, extra large one, or they, like, built the statue, like, with, and, like, merged things together, like, around the jersey, and now they can't replace it.
He looks like he's growling in, like, anger over having to wear this jersey, but, like, confused anger. He's like, why?
Why am I at Baylor?
Why am I at Baylor? Can I leave? Like, I disavow my alma mater.
Don't want to be.
Because I'm a bear with a degree. And B, why am I wearing this jersey? And why am I so, like, in a, such a frumpy position?
It is weird. I was also, I couldn't see, the bears were, like, hiding and, like, would not come out under any circumstances.
I don't blame them.
Yeah, when I was there. And I was like, I feel you guys. Cause, and that was even before, like, I think that was before the Pepper Report even came out. So, like, it's only gotten worse from there.
Yeah, you see that Mark Schlebach has a book coming out?
Oh, God. This is going to get so
like, it just announced today. It's I wouldn't feel great about it.
NCAA, hold your investigation for this, because...
You know who's thrilled? UNC. UNC is not going to... NCAA is so far backed up with all this stuff. It's like Louisville's supposed to be coming in, like, a month or two now.
That's
like,
never happened.
What? UNC may never. They might just hope that it gets buried enough to, like, not have to deal with it.
Which
NC State message boards will never let them.
No, and NC State message boards are so pissed about, like, everything. Like if you thought that, like, Georgetown fans were, like, obsessive about us and everything.
Oh, it's not even close. NC State.
State fans, like, will tweet at me just, like, anytime I mention UNC. Like, I mentioned the Sleeping Giant shit yesterday, and, like, every single NC State blog and, like, even reporter was, like, tweeting at me, like, that's not us, that's UNC. Like, oh no, it's you too.
You know why I think it is? It's because NC State isn't anyone's, like, they're always a bridesmaid, but never a bride in terms of, like, the rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
Because Duke and UNC, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. And, like, with the same exact schools, which makes it even funnier. Like, but, like, Duke and UNC just care so much more about each other that, like, NC State's just sitting there, like, poking people on the shoulders, and no one cares. Like, it is funny that the Tobacco Road, like, those two schools did that to multiple other schools to the point where NC State left, or Maryland left the conference.
They got so mad.
I'm sure if, NC State fans are just so mad.
They got so many times
about everything.
They got so many different shades of blue balls from the Carolina schools that they finally had to go somewhere else.
Like, all the conspiracy theories that pop up in, like, politics now, like, NC State's been about that life for, like, 10 years with
minimum.
Sports.
Oh man, this podcast was about Syracuse for so goddamn long, and then we just couldn't have it.
We hit the 50-minute mark, and we're like, and we just drove off a cliff.
F it. Anyway, I think that's a good place to stop, Dan. This has been a fun one.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. We were, like, weirdly on topic, and then weirdly way off topic.
Just
but
veered,
like,
into a ravine.
I appreciated it.
Agreed. So yeah, Dan, thank you as always for joining. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. Look forward to it next week.
Indeed. Next week casually starts our non-Syracuse related preview series. We're doing Independence next week, so there's still going to be plenty of Syracuse talk because there's no way in hell we can talk about, like, four teams for an hour.
I can't wait to talk about UMass for 25 minutes.
My sister went there, so I do have some things to say about it.
Can we not talk about Notre Dame?
Oh, that would be the best. That would be.
Can
very,
we put Notre Dame?
That'd be
can
very,
we put Notre Dame in the ACC one?
Oh, let's do that.
Yes.
Very everyday should be Saturday-ish thing to do. All
right, we have to remember not to even mention them. Like, we can't even
except
mention
for,
that they're an independent.
Except for the fact that they went 4-8.
Yeah, at the end, we'll just say, and also Notre Dame went 4-8, and then we'll just wrap it.
They would have gone 3-9 if we'd gotten our shit done.
Yeah, I need to, like, make a note, like, put a reminder on my phone or something.
No Notre Dame, like, just have an alert go off. Just Notre Dame, but, like, the N and the O are capitalized, and everything else is lowercase. You'll know.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Troy Noon's Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on any other service you use, and I can't say go orange because there's nothing going on.
There is no orange to go.
No, rowing.
Oh, and track, right?
We got rowing and track. So
go Justin Knight.
Yeah, still go orange.
Go orange.